Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, April 11, 2016. South Sudanese government officials say the SPLM-IO is to blame for delays in the implementation of the peace deal.
The last group arrived yesterday evening. Now the ball is in the court of their chairman to come to Juba. Well, he has been telling us so many times, so we cannot. It is only when he comes that we will believe that he has come.
And South and Sudan government says the Darfur referendum will go on as scheduled.
And this will not obstruct, you know, the election, because the majority of the people now registered, you know, there is no rebel except in Jebel Marra Mountain.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. But we first go to Wau, where at least four people were killed and two others were injured in two separate incidents over the weekend. Eyewitnesses say one incident, two soldiers shot at a fellow soldier and his brother following a dispute in a local bar. A woman who was also injured says her two brothers were shot and killed in front of her eyes. A state official says the incident is under investigation. Michael Atit has this report for VOA from Wau.
Speaking in Arabic, 29-year-old Julie Severino Zabun says she was shot in her left leg after she screamed at two SPLA soldiers who shot and killed her brothers. Zabun says her two brothers were standing outside the fence and they shot at the first one, and when she started screaming, the other soldiers shot at the other brother. She says, when she was still screaming at them, one of the soldiers shot at her left leg. It was sad to see my two brothers being killed in front of me, Zabun says. She says she does not know why the soldiers killed her brothers. A medical worker at Kombone Hospital in Wau, where Zabun is being treated for her injuries, confirms that Zabun was shot twice in her leg. Speaking in Arabic, Wau State Governor Elias Waya Nyipoch says authorities will bring the culprit to justice.
We have two eyewitnesses for this incident, the SPLA soldier who is now under treatment in military hospital in Wau, and the other old man who was shot on both legs. And they cannot deny, because when I sent a police to the scene, they saw the SPLA soldiers with their guns. And it is clear to everyone that it is our army who killed.
Military spokesman Colonel Lul Rai Kwang declined to comment on the incident.
I have not received an official report from our command on the ground, and therefore I'm not going to comment on it until we get the correct information regarding the incident.
In the second deadly incident last weekend, witnesses say suspected soldiers shot and killed a Bodaboda driver along road inside Wau town. The witnesses say there was no provocation for the soldiers to shoot the Bodaboda driver. The witnesses do not want to be identified for fear of the reprisals from the government. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
22 South Sudanese nationals are facing death sentence in Khartoum after being convicted on charges of terrorism and undermining Sudan's constitutional order. The 22 men had been allegedly fighting alongside the Darfur-based Justice and Equality Movement rebel group, but later joined a rebel faction that signed a peace deal with the government of Sudan in 2013. Nabil Biagio files this report for VOA from Khartoum.
The Darfur-based Justice and Equality Movement has fought the Sudanese government since 2003. In 2013, a splinter group called the Justice and Equality Movement, Dabajo Faction, signed a peace agreement with the Sudanese government. Ahmed Abdul Majid is the spokesperson for the Jem Dabajo Faction. He says the plight of the 22 South Sudanese nationals happened when his movement handed over the fighters to the Sudanese government for reintegration into Sudan's armed forces.
This case started when we began integration forces. When we handed group to the government on 2015 to separate the forces home, they will going to be part of the government and military, and home, they will go out and so on.
Abdelmajid says the responsibility for what is happening to the South Sudanese rebels falls on the shoulders of the leader of the main rebel group, Jibril Ibrahim. He says he kept them with his forces even after South Sudan became an independent country. Abdelmajid says the Sudanese authorities are also to blame because they decided to charge the South Sudanese instead of repatriating them to South Sudan as part of a general amnesty the government had offered rebel groups, which signed an agreement with Khartoum in 2013.
They took them to trial on September 2015. They faced many of charges, taking arms against the state, undermining constitutional. So this is the cases which they are facing.
Sudan Information Minister Ahmed Bilal says the South Sudanese nationals on death row are not being discriminated against because of their nationality. He says they faced a fair trial according to the law of the land.
All the rebels, we caught them red-handed in action and these things. They've been to court and the sentence according to the legal procedure here in Sudan. They are not alone. There are some Sudanese with them.
South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makwe agrees with his Sudanese counterpart. Makwe says the South Sudanese nationals facing the death sentence in Khartoum must answer for what he calls legitimate charges against them.
If you are a South Sudanese today and you commit an offense anywhere and you are arrested according to the laws of that country, do I move in to protect you meanwhile you are a criminal because you are a South Sudanese? We only interfere on South Sudanese who are arrested and charged for political reasons. But any criminal who commits his own offense, this will be a special relations. We don't have an official position on that.
But Bilal says being convicted is one thing and executing the sentence is another. He says his government is willing to engage with the government of South Sudan in order to find a political settlement to the issue.
Now, the contacts between the two countries and these things, it might give some sort of solution to the result.
A Khartoum-based team of human rights lawyers are also fighting the death penalty for the South Sudanese citizens and are appealing to the Sudanese court to reconsider and treat the 22 South Sudanese as prisoners of war. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Khartoum.
Still in Sudan, the people of Darfur are taking part in an administrative referendum in the area's five states today. The three-day exercise is meant to determine how the region should be run, either as one semi-autonomous region or continue as five states. International and local analysts say they believe the exercise is not credible. Nabil Biagio has the story for VOA from Khartoum.
Darfur Referendum Commission officials say the 3 days of voting will be conducted from 8:30 in the morning until 6:30 each evening. Darfur's five states are divided into 64 localities with 1,450 voting centers. Dozens of international and local organizations are in Darfur to monitor the progress of the vote. The U.S. Department of State issued a statement over the weekend saying that, under current rules and conditions, a referendum on the status of Darfur cannot be considered a credible expression of the will of the people of Darfur. The statement cites insecurity in the region and the fact that hundreds of thousands of Darfuris who are sheltering in UN camps will not be able to vote. Moreover, it says the decision by the referendum commission that only Darfuris who live in Darfur are eligible to vote in the referendum excludes millions of refugees living outside of the country. The statement says lasting peace in Sudan will only be attained through a political process that addresses the underlying causes of the Darfur conflict. Rabi Abdel Ati, a prominent member of Sudan's ruling National Congress Party and advisor to the Information Ministry, says the number of registered voters in the referendum is big enough to give the process all the legitimacy it needs.
The people who registered to vote in this referendum, more than 3 million people. And the whole people of Darfur are not, exceeding maybe 6 or 5 million.
Abdul Ati says insecurity is limited to a few areas inside Darfur.
Sometimes, the elections carried out, and exclude places and that areas that, you know, suffering from insecurity. And this will not obstruct, you know, the election, because the majority of the people now registered, you know, there is no rebel except in Jabal Marra Mountain.
Abdul Aati says his government has enough experience in conducting elections that it has developed a model which has worked during the presidential elections in 2010 and 2015, as well as during the referendum on South Sudan's independence in January 2011.
We have, you know, a criteria of whether to convene election or not to convene election. And this criteria is adopted so many times, and we acknowledge, you know, the criteria and the views and the opinion of the referendum, National Referendum Commission.
Sudanese analyst Haj Hamad notes that Darfur administrative referendum is a requirement of the Doha Agreement the government signed with the rebels in 2011. But he says the government is choosing to ignore important parts of the agreement.
We have, for instance, the resettlement process. You know, this is a government which is completely bankrupt, and a Doha agreement is again minimally funded by the main sponsor, which is the Qatari government.
Hamad says besides the financial gain the Sudan government will receive from the guarantor of the referendum, President Omar al-Bashir will also be able to consolidate his power in Darfur by re-establishing the current five states and dissolving the interim regional authority established by the Doha agreement.
Sometimes, you know, the elections carried out, you know, and exclude places and that areas that, you know, suffering from insecurity. And this will not obstruct, you know, the election, because the majority of the people now registered, you know, there is no rebel except in Jabal Marra Mountain.
He says the results of the referendum are bound to favor keeping intact the current five states. He says such a choice will not reflect the will and option of the people of Darfur, but rather serve the interest of President Bashir and Darfuri officials.
The Darfuri people are quite illiterate and very simplistic. They are traditional in all aspects of their life, and they can easily sway and manipulate it by such strong faction and Darfuri within the government.
Regardless of the outcome of the referendum, Hamad says the international community is unlikely to challenge the Sudanese government on its credibility. He says administrative referendums are different from political referendums in that they are considered to be internal affairs. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio.
We now come back to Juba, where at least 1,370 SPLA-IO soldiers who will serve in the Joint Integrated Police, Presidential Guard and Shared Command units have arrived in Juba. Both the government and the SPLM-IO say it's a big step towards forming the Transitional Government of National Unity. Mungume Debs Rakarinj has more for VOA from Juba.
UN Mission in South Sudan spokesperson Ariane Quentia says the last batch of 90 SPLM-IO soldiers arrived in Juba yesterday.
It is a very important step forward because it means that the first phase of the transitional security agreement has been completed and we can move forward. One of the most important things that I admit we would be looking at is, of course, the return of the vice president-designate, Riek Machar, because only with the return of the vice president can this country have a transitional government of national unity.
Machar's spokesman, James Gadet, says now that the opposition forces are in Juba, Machar will travel to Juba on April 18th.
Well, this is a positive step towards the facilitation of the return of the chairman. We commend it, and very soon, in the next 2 days, hopefully tomorrow or the day after tomorrow, our deputy chairman may arrive in Juba, General Alfred Ladogore. The chairman will follow on the 18th as scheduled.
Government spokesman Michael Makwei says the opposition should stop delaying the formation of the transitional government.
The last group arrived yesterday evening. Now the call is in the court of their chairman to come to Juba. Well, he has been telling us so many times, so we cannot. It is only when he comes that we will believe that he has come.
François Lonche Lefol, deputy chairperson of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, welcome the arrival of the SPLM-IO forces. The governments of China, Ethiopia, Norway, the United Kingdom, and the United States funded the transportation of the former rebels to Juba. Gadet says the SPLM-IO is still concerned about delays in demilitarizing Juba as stipulated in the August peace agreement.
This is unfortunate, but we hope that the issue will be tackled by Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission that will verify whether government has withdrawn the forces and there are no more forces coming in. It's a process we should push, but I can't say we are satisfied.
Gadet says the former rebels are still waiting for some of their weapons to be transported to Juba. Quente says the two sides should stop bickering and start implementing the peace deal.
There are many, many, many priority issues to be tackled by this new government. I will only name two of them. One of them is the extremely seriously deteriorating economic condition, and that's for all the people of South Sudan. We've reached the stage where something must be done. A government must do something.
Quentia says the other issue is the controversy over the newly created 28 states. President Salva Kiir unilaterally created the 28 states out of the original 10. International observers have said the move to create 28 states was in violation of the August peace agreement, but that the two sides should continue to form the transitional government of national unity. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the South Sudan government accepts for the first time that the country is facing food insecurity. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
is it ever okay to sell licenses to hunt endangered wildlife, or should endangered wildlife always be protected?
It depends. If they are threats to humans, they should be hunted, but if they are not, let them live freely. Yes, they add spice to life, like just go see them in the zoo and wildlife parks. It's cool.
These animals are precious. They should not be killed. That's why I'm saying it's not okay for the government of any country to give lances to anybody.
Wildlife should always be protected, and then the regulations should always be actually also regulated.
I think it's necessary for foxes normally to be given that lances so that whenever they are treating those animals, whenever they are collecting those animals, maybe for consumption, so that they will know the capacity.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The government of South Sudan is admitting for the first time that the country is facing unprecedented levels of food insecurity. Information Minister Michael Makuei says the government has approved the purchase of more than 12,000 metric tons of food to be distributed across the country. Waki Simon Wudu has the story for VOA from Juba.
38-year-old Elizabeth Akol prepares a meal for her four children at the UN Protection of Civilians site in Juba. Akol is among the thousands of South Sudanese who fled their homes when fighting erupted in Juba in December 2013. Speaking in Hanwer language, Akol says her family eats once a day just because there is not enough food in the camp to go around. She says it is only the United Nations providing them with the food. Akol says they receive only two buckets of food for four people, adding it only lasts for half a month. Akol says the United Nations provides her with the food items such as sorghum, beans, cooking oil, and salt. Once that food is gone, Akol says she goes begging from her neighbors. She has no source of income in the congested camp to supplement the little rations she receives for her family from the UN. According to the United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization and the World Food Program, at least 2.8 million South Sudanese, or about 25% of the country's population, are in urgent need of food assistance. On Friday, South Sudan's cabinet held a meeting chaired by President Salva Kiir and discussed the food security situation across the country. Information Minister Michael Makuei told journalists in Juba the government is aware of the increasing food shortages in South Sudan.
In fact, the hunger situation is serious and we need to take real action so that we can address it. We have not yet reached that that stage of famine, but we are a stage of hunger. There is a hunger gap. There is a food security gap.
Makwe says the cabinet approved 226 million South Sudanese pounds to buy 12,600 metric tons of food items in rank. He says the food will be transported to various parts of the country. He says some of the food will be airlifted while the rest will be transported by land or by river barges.
The Ministry of Agriculture, Ministry of Humanitarian Affairs and Finance have been directed to come out with a comprehensive plan that will enable us to address the current situation up to the next harvest in this year.
Juba resident Akin Santo Deng says the government's decision must be implemented quickly.
In our country, people are facing a lot of crisis, especially food items. So this is very good move for government to do such a job. And my point is, it should not be only in word of mouth. It should be in action and urgent need sooner than later. People are in need of food everywhere.
The FAO and the WFP last week warned that the food gap across South Sudan has widened due to the failure in good harvests affected by bad weather and continued fighting in parts of the country. The agency say the situation has led to a food deficit of about 400,000 metric tons across South Sudan, which is greater than any other year in the country. In February, both UN agencies and UNICEF said 40,000 people across the country were at the brink of catastrophe because of the lack of food to eat. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
And now for some good news from South Sudan. A South Korean international artist is calling on South Sudanese to embrace peace. Kim Jang-hoon, who is famous for promoting peace across the world, performed in Juba alongside South Sudanese musicians on Saturday. Mungume Devs Rakarinj attended the concert and files this report from Juba.
Juba's Limatata basketball court was filled to capacity as hundreds of people attended Kim Jang-hoon's peace concert. The South Korean rock singer did not disappoint as he joined South Sudan's Emmanuel Kembe and Stephen Afia to perform their hit songs and a few of his own. When he arrived in Juba, Jang-hoon told South Sudanese to lay down their weapons and sing and dance for peace. His concert was dubbed Cheer Up South Sudan. 22-year-old Monica Mao said she was impressed with Jang-hoon's performance.
Seeing Kim Jong-hoon coming to South Sudan really gave me a great courage because looking at the situation of South Sudan, not a lot of people would accept to come, but he took it upon himself to come to South Sudan. And I'm very glad, and even though I couldn't understand his music, well, I moved with the crowd.
26-year-old Abraham Mapor, who hails from Western Lakes State, says back in his hometown of Rumbek, live entertainment is a thing of the past.
You cannot find people moving around 7th Sharp. You find like the city or the town has nobody within. And you also, I feel fearing because everybody is having gun in his own hand. Everybody, you don't know who is a soldier and who is a civilian because everybody is having a gun in his own hand for protection. And also if you don't have, you feel suspicious.
Gulu Warai, cheer up South Sudan! We shall overcome! We shall overcome and let peace reign once again.
Mapor says such a peace concerts inspire the people, especially youth.
If people continue doing this, I think all the youth will get more information and gather together and unite.
And Jang-hoon says that is why he came to South Sudan.
I always think music is language. Music is language. No age, no color, no nation, no religion. I believe music is a language. So all the people of South Sudan doesn't know me, but I make them happy.
Nadia Arop Dudi, South Sudan's Minister of Youth and Sports, agrees. Arop Dudi says music can play a big role in fostering peace and reconciliation.
We are in troubled time. We need to recognize ourselves. We need to come together. As we are here today, we are a different tribe. The tribe is not a crime. The tribe is our dignity.
Together.
Jang Hoon is also known as the donation angel in South Korea. Some of his donations include food to the homeless, supporting several orphanages, contributing the fight against forced sexual slavery, the construction of new hospitals and schools, and fundraisers for children with cardiac diseases. Saturday's concert was free to the public. In July 2012, during a concert at the Nokia's Theater in Los Angeles, California, he received a letter signed by U.S. President Barack Obama notifying him of his winning the President's Volunteer Service Award. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. At least four people were killed and two others injured in two separate incidents in Wau over the weekend. Eyewitnesses say in one incident, two soldiers shot at a fellow soldier and his brother following a dispute in a bar. A woman who was injured in the incident says her two brothers were shot and killed in front of her. The 29-year-old woman says she was shot in her left leg after she screamed at the two soldiers who shot and killed her brothers. After hearing that the two men were shot in the bar, several citizens attacked the soldiers, killing one of them. The other escaped from the scene. 22 South Sudanese nationals are on death row in Khartoum after being convicted of terrorism and undermining Sudan's constitutional order. The 22 men were allegedly fighting alongside the Darfur-based Justice and Equality Movement rebel group, but later joined a rebel faction that signed a deal with the government in 2013. The Darfur-based Justice and Equality Movement has fought the Sudanese government since 2003. In 2013, a splinter group called Justice and Equality Movement signed a peace deal with the Sudanese government. And finally, the people of Darfur are casting ballots in an administrative referendum on the future of the area's five states. The three-day exercise is meant to determine how the region should be run, either as one semi-autonomous region or continue on as five states. International and local observers say the exercise is not credible. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Shane Shane by Emmanuel Kembe.
The voice of the innocent blood cries out with heart-rending insistence in the heart of the person who killed. If you want peace, work for justice. And for the heads of the states and political leaders, no sacrifice the lives of their fellow citizens. Shame, shame. This song tells about the actual war situation in South Sudan.
Shame, shame, shame. Shame, shame, mama. Shame, shame. Shame, shame.
We have been listening to Emmanuel Kembe with that song, Shen Shen. I am John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Please join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.